You are listening to Art Not Science, presented by the Physics Room Contemporary Art Space, a monthly podcast of artist talks, panel discussions, and other events.
Kia ora, my name is Abby Kinane and I'm the director of the Physics Room, a contemporary art space dedicated to developing and promoting contemporary art and critical discourse in Aotearoa. Based in central Ōtautahi since 1996, we assist artists with resources and opportunities to enable creative and professional development, and we work to support the acknowledgement and understanding of contemporary art among New Zealanders. Our goal is to actively seek links between the arts and other areas of cultural production, and to involve art as a contributing voice in wider intellectual, social, and political debate. In this episode of Art Not Science, we're presenting talks with the artists who created the two collaborative commissions from our exhibitions Monitor 3.0 and 3.1, which were developed in response to Monitor, an exhibition of moving image work from Aotearoa and abroad, curated by Sean Kerr and David Watson in 1996. These new exhibitions build on the original curatorial framework and include three programs: a program of commissioned collaborative work by emerging New Zealand artists, a three-part program of recent work by national and international moving image practitioners, as well as a selection of work from the original Monitor exhibition. In the first talk, the artists Min Young He and Arissa Keane are joined by Jamie Hinton and Michelle Wang to talk about the moving image installation As You Come Down for Monitor 3.0. In As You Come Down, Min and Arissa embed the feelings of the build-up and empty lurch associated with this year as they find footing, post-university but pre-artist, into a series of installations that draw on fiction, humour and the collaborative process. At the crux of the work is the phrase, "The time has come," a theatrical announcement often employed as a rhetorical device in advertisements and by politicians that builds expectation but often leads to very little. Wooden periscopes overcomplicate the viewing of a comparatively simple collection of moving image works. Ceramic devices appear functional but are, in reality, impractical, while displaced video and sound resonate uncertainty and discomfort. In the second talk, artist, curator and educator Sean Kerr speaks with the artists Shin Ye Lin and Shin He Al Lin about their three-channel moving image installation, Thus the Blast Carried It Into the World, for Monitor 3.1. Working with sound, filmed, found and animated footage, they trace the story of It, whose journey unfolds, or folds in, as an unresolved series of beginnings. It is an audiovisual experience that seeks to heighten perception, deals with cognition and meaning structures, and explores narrative and language in their multiplicities. Now let's head to the gallery to hear more about As You Come Down with Jamie Hinton, Michelle Wang, and the artists Min Young He and Arissa Keane. Kia ora mai tātou.
Today we're joined by Min Young He and Arissa Keane, who are the artists of the installation that we're sitting in at the moment. And so we're going to talk about their work today, but before we do that, I'll just say a little bit about the exhibition that it's part of, Monitor 3.0. So Monitor 3.0 is a revisiting and reimagining of Monitor, which is an exhibition that was held at the Physics Room in 1996. And that was curated by Sean Kerr and David Watson, and it was an exhibition of recent video work from New Zealand and international artists. It was split into two programs, the first of which was a program of four commissioned collaborative works, which paired usually a video artist with somebody from another discipline. So there were video artists and architects, video artists and painters and sculptors and that kind of thing. And then the second program was a program of existing recent work from New Zealand and abroad. The American selections were selected by David Watson, who was from Canterbury but is living in the States. And so we were interested in Monitor because we had moved back to the Art Centre, which is where the Physics Room began in 1996. And this year we've been looking a little bit at the history of the Physics Room, partly because we're coming up to the 25-year anniversary of the Physics Room, and also through exhibitions like Eddie Clemens' Kiosk Director's Commentary, which looked at the history of the kiosk. The other reason we were interested in Monitor is that we'd moved from the Christchurch Art Gallery space to this space, and we always had a problem in that space where we couldn't show very many projected works, particularly because there was so much glass and there was so much light. So we were excited about the possibility of showing a lot of video work. And so for this 3.0 version of the show, we decided to more or less keep that original framework. So there are two programs, one which is collaborative commissioned works, and the other is recent existing works. But we have added a third program, which is selections from the original monitor exhibition. So maybe I'll pass on to you, Jamie, to talk about why you decided to ask these guys to do the collaborative work.
Yeah, just touching on what Michelle said, that we really wanted to kind of stay faithful to the original curatorial framework, which is to interdisciplinary collaborations and collaboration in general. And we'd known that Min and Arissa had been working together, that they put President to the Blue Oyster together. And a lot of the artists that appear in the original program, so you've got like a Lisa Rehana and Arnie O'Neill video work, which is pretty early on in Lisa Rehana's career as well. So it's so the work in that, which is so the 1996 original program is playing on that monitor there. It was really kind of a chance for two artists who had been kind of fresh out of art school to try something else. So it really, really made a lot of sense to invite these two to make new work. And so it's also one of the Physics Room's kind of main priorities is to commission new experimental work from artists in order for them to try new things out. So, we invited Min and Arissa, and it was a pretty open brief. The kind of only thing that we specified was that it had to kind of relate to or reference moving image, but be cross-disciplinary, interdisciplinary in nature. And then we really left it open to them to decide what the subject might be, what the themes might be that they want to explore within that. So maybe this is a good time to pass over to you both and ask how that collaborative process occurred and what the thinking was behind that.
Professor, thank you.
Yeah.
It's an honour that we were chosen. And yeah, thanks for thinking of us and giving us this opportunity. It really means a lot. I guess like Min and I had been starting to think together, and we'd found that worked at least. So then to have an opportunity to make together as well and really like get into that that side of things was the natural next step, and
it was encouraging.
It was obviously validating to have a reason to do that, and the financial support to do that as well. And
yeah, I think those things probably combined started off a lot of our thinking surrounding all the elements that we've put into the show. Like, one of the main things was that feeling of post-university graduating and not knowing what's going to come next, not really having a direction set out for you or, you know, a path to follow quite clearly. So feeling in a limbo state and not knowing where to go. So having that opportunity, you know, kind of gifted to us was really, really wonderful and helped us in kind of figuring out those feelings and making sense of it and coming to terms with it as well. The fact that those feelings will always be there, they will always come regardless of what happens and what goes on. So, yeah, that's
kind of. There was early on, I think we started really strong and understanding each other on that concept to start the show with, and so the feeling of the build up and then the absence of a conclusion really. And
so what do you mean when you say the build up? Like, what was the build up? Like the build up after,
I guess, the build up
after art school, or the after the invitation,
like spending
to this?
4 years of uni and then we're
being
done.
Being told you're gonna be an artist, or like you're studying for this thing, and then just hands off into the world. Like the phrase emerging artist is kind of interesting to me. Like emerging into, like you're not quite there yet, but you're gonna be.
I think we put it in the pamphlet as well, like about feeling post-student, pre-artist stage. So even feeling not necessarily like a lacking of confidence, but a lack of like something of being able to stand and have a footing and be like, I am an artist and we can do this and we can survive doing this. Yeah.
Yeah, and I just remembered some early conversation with Min about while we were kind of planning what we would do, wondering whose practice would show more, and like there were concerns from me that Min's work would show through more, but we thought through, you know, like we all of those conversations were really, really open. And so that it started really early on that we would just talk about every concern.
Really honest collaboration.
Yeah. A lot of talking. A lot of questioning. Yeah.
And is that how you had worked? I mean, because it's kind of based on we say collaboration, but maybe what we're talking about is a friendship as well. Yeah. Like, is that fundamental to that? Is that the...
Yes.
Yeah. We get along.
Yeah. We're pretty good friends.
Yeah.
I think the collaborations helped us quite a bit though. Like I think you described it early on, like, oh, it's like having a relationship with someone. You have to like learn to communicate with each other and be honest with each other about concerns.
Yeah.
We're in an art partnership.
Yes.
And how did that manifest then in the kind of making of the work and the development of those of the work in the show? Like, really nuts and bolts, like, did you suggest something, or did you kind of brainstorm stuff, or how did it roll out?
Well, I feel like everything just happened.
Everything kind feels of like that now.
Yeah.
But I remember Min had mentioned periscopes, or like this disconnect between the viewer and the viewing, or the viewed image. So that obviously led to the periscopes, and it was also a bit of fun. But they turned into really like serious objects that weren't or gave you something else. And the making of everything though was very much together. We did everything together. Learned a lot together as well. And neither of us had done woodwork before.
Hadn't really used clay before.
No.
I've never welded before, so that was like my first time learning to weld.
Yeah, it was a little teaching.
Yeah,
that's quite cool. It was nice.
Yeah. A lot of sharing of knowledge, I think, and learning together.
Yeah.
And why did you choose these new forms to work with all of us? Like, what was the... Was it because it was a kind of unknown territory for both of you, so that you could explore it?
I feel like partly together. That was it, and then also, I don't know, I feel like it was... Because we had just finished uni and we were in a studio together, we kind of felt like we could use whatever we had, like whatever we had access to, which was like things from Musgroves or steel that we could order, and people we knew and they had connections with that we couldn't. Yeah.
Yeah, it was, I guess it turned into this, well, the materials came out of a want maybe for establishing these connections outside of the university to be able to do like these woodworking things in-house in the studio thanks to Polly's tools and knowing where to go for different things and using some of that knowledge that we already had and then some that we learned. I don't know who suggested Musgroves, but that was a good one.
Yeah.
And probably also, like, we both in uni would have kept to a tight budget with our materials, so the budget really drove a lot of our material exploration. We took advantage of the fact that we could.
The fact that we could just go out and buy things, and not feel guilty about it. Like,
it was kind of like, how much can we get from this experience to better ourselves and our working and try these things out with support. What a crazy thing.
I know. Oh my god.
But also limits. I mean, like, it was not an unlimited budget.
It felt like we'd never gotten money like that before.
No.
We didn't know what to do with half of it.
Yeah. You are listening to Art Not Science, presented by the Physics Room Contemporary Art Space.
Could you guys talk about maybe each of the works individually, maybe starting with The Time Has Come?
Mm-hmm. I guess that's almost like the starting point we had for the whole collaborative effort. So we were kind of tossing up a few phrases between us as we were brainstorming. So one was, Arissa was talking about finding an aesthetic, but it also being an aesthetic, like not like the kind of a play of words and things like that. And I was thinking a lot about The Time Has Come, the phrase itself, and ideas of that lurch and feeling like something should have come by now, something should have happened by now, but not knowing what that thing is. And so, yeah, that was like a constant ongoing collecting effort. So we just basically manually scraped the internet for videos that said The Time Has Come and manually cut together pieces to create a collection.
And aesthetically, like the simplicity of that form that the video takes, just like all these little snippets. Like we were thinking about the original monitor show and like that time and really simple ways to make film and like that kind of like dated lo-fi, or you know, like it's a little bit it's not cool. It's just compiled a lot of clips. Maybe it is. Maybe it's kind of a lot of labor. Yeah.
So the audio for that was also really important, and I personally really liked the overwhelming nature of hearing that phrase over and over again. It loses its meaning, all that classic stuff. And then we were looking at.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I've been kind of fixed on Steve Reich's performances of sound, and he had this work, an orchestra performed, kind of a collection of speech clips and different things, and the orchestra, the violins would mimic the tones of the speech. So I've just liked that form for a really long time, and Min has a friend who's a jazz musician.
Callum McInnes, who I think has finished jazz school, we reached out to him and asked if he was able to transcribe the audio compilation we made into some kind of score. We'd given the example of Steve Reich, but then I also gave like a lowbrow, I guess, example of, you know, like those meme videos where musicians will take like Cardi B's like voice clips and like pianify it and just turn it into a melody. So that, yeah, and then approached him and was like, can you do this? Is this a possible thing? And so, yeah, I think we just wanted to make the audio experience a bit strange and bizarre and complicated, but in a nice way.
It was that. Yeah. It was the same like displacement that we were looking into a bit with the transformation or disconnect between a thing and the experience.
Which is, I guess, how the periscope is also.
Yeah,
as well.
So it's that big because we worked with the like 150 height convention of viewing, like that being the center point for the viewer or the viewing point. And being this small joke about giving people access to this thing that you can't see from the ground, but what you see is kind of underwhelming. So it gives, hopefully, like, I guess, and there's an element of that in each of the works, I think, that we wanted our audience to feel those feelings that we were feeling about, you know, the build-up and the nothing being there for us. So that was the first one that, I guess, embodied that feeling, that we would give access to a viewer to see something, but what they're seeing is not... nothing useful, it's just nothing that they can take with them. It's and difficult to describe to other people.
ultimately unsatisfying.
Yeah.
And is that why you guys have chosen to show a number of the works on poems as well?
I guess so. It just made sense, I think.
I think the poems probably came from the frogs.
Yeah.
The frogs. Frogs. We were looking at ways to amplify sound in alternative ways, or I guess the use for the clay that we bought. And we found this video that was like, there were a bunch of YouTube videos that told you how to make ceramic phone amplifiers, but they were all frogs. They all were in the form of frogs. Yeah. So we thought we'd just use that and have, we'd have audio and visual together on a phone. Mm. Like that is probably why we started thinking about phones and as a means of display. The twisty periscope and that work.
Maximum displacement
is the title. We wanted to work with the pillar or the architecture a little bit, and we'd already thought of the periscopes and that we could use that method to go around.
Yeah. And to further complicate the viewing and projections itself. Yeah.
And again, working with that, the idea of this, you know, projector giving you an image, but it appears on the wall so small because it goes through this very convoluted avenue, and all of the image is lost, basically. Mm. Imagine that projector being directly projected onto the wall. That's how big the image should be. Just got that cut.
Yeah.
Which is of us swinging from a macro carpet tree in New Brighton. that was that idea of the pendulum.
Yeah. We had been talking about that limbo feeling, and we'd been looking at other ways it existed, I guess. And
Metaphors.
And one of them was like the scientific pendulous swinging, and we were really focused on that pause right before it swings back to the other direction.
That is maximum displacement.
Yeah.
I mean, there seems to be kind of a lot of precarity and precariousness in the material forms in the works, and, you know, you've got the platform up quite high. These ceramic forms look quite fragile. They're doing functional things, though, in a lot of them. The frogs are holding the speakers. And this is kind of meant as a pulley system. I was wondering if you could talk about kind of that idea of precarious balance in these works and kind of fragile materiality as well, because we've got monkey film down here in the corner.
Yeah.
Monkey film. Yeah. I think that making all those monkeys, I guess, began a lot of our thinking about making things that didn't really make sense materially, but visually and functionally it technically did, like the pulleys, like that they do a job they need to do, but pull a little bit too hard and it will break. And the monkeys are kind of the same, like they're based on the Bowler Monkeys game, and we both took turns playing the game with the monkeys that we handmade, and there were a few that broke that we kind of wanted or knew that would happen, and we're okay with it in the end.
Yeah. And this, I mean, it's funny.
Yeah.
And I mean, I find it funny that material disconnect between something that really, it's prone to falling. Why would it be made out of ceramic?
We're just having a bit of fun.
They want to do. Yeah. The editing or putting together of that film, I guess also trying to think of probably like the Lisa Rihanna and Ani O'Neill style of video. Because it was like, it's like a little bit funny, and loose in its form, like considered, but
it's very catchy.
Yeah.
Cutesy.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you do see Lisa and Ani in that video kind of hamming it up and playing to the camera, and there is that. I mean, we only see your hands and things, but that's apparent, right?
Yeah, with the sound and the lighting, and we wanted to make it feel way more dramatic than it actually is. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I guess that takes us to the final work.
Final work.
Could you tell us about the title of it?
Seeing Eye to Eye.
Seeing Eye to Eye.
Slash
Nature of a Collaboration.
Which we, since we, you know, we didn't agree on our title, so we both have ours in there. Which is, you know, both
perfect.
In, yeah, I don't know, that seems to fit nicely with the work and where that came from. Because we have somehow the same eye height. So that's our eye height.
Both of us.
Yeah.
We originally thought it would be like a weird skew. So it'd be like a interesting or strange, like...
Like a slight angle through the wall, like quite subtle, but then the mirrors would, I don't know.
You'd see, yeah.
Yeah.
But no, it's just...
It's just us.
A straight line.
And we knew we wanted that accidental or the potential accidental eye contact through the wall, but also that the confrontation of, I guess, everyone's, or if you go to view that work, the time has come, then you look through and the periscope shows you another image, but you look into this one, it shows you yourself, or you pull the string and you'll either see yourself again or a person on the other side. So that accidental eye contact or accidental, like, you know, you catch yourself in a mirror, but that speaks to our collaboration in a nice way, I think.
That's a sweet, simple way.
Yeah. The way that... we would sometimes see eye to eye perfectly, and then sometimes we'd, you know,
look back into ourselves.
Yeah, like we would just
be lost, yeah.
We were just in our own heads sometimes, so.
So what's next? I mean, is this an ongoing collaborative art partnership?
Yes.
I'd say so, yeah.
I think so.
We're going to take over the world.
We've been really lucky again because we're going to be able to do another collaborative show at Blue Oyster sometime next year. So this was a wonderful experience to help us get started on making and working together, I think. Yeah.
Excellent. Okay. Thanks, Min. Thanks, Arisa.
Thank you very much.
And thanks, everybody, for coming along.
That was Jamie, Michelle, and the artists Min and Arisa talking about the first collaborative commission for Monitor 3.0. Now we head back into the gallery for a talk with Sean Kerr and the artists Shinya Lin and Al Lin on the second collaborative commission. Thus the Blast carried it into the world for Monitor 3.1.
Kia ora tātou, welcome. It's kind of funny being distant. Sorry for not being down there. Just turning into a cyborg in the next few days, so let's prepare for that. I was really, really, really happy to commission Shinya and Al to produce this work, and I didn't know what they're going to make, and I think that's really important in the sense that I left it to them as artists to generate a work which is pretty outstanding. I've seen your work before, and I've seen live performances, and I really enjoy how they put things together. There's a level of freedom and exploration and play in their work. It's not seen that much, to be honest, and I really enjoy that. There's a sense of humour, but it's also quite political, and just how they see the world around them. Yeah, but the three channel work is something else. I know that we talked before that we don't really want to talk directly about the work, but it's maybe the ideas around the work. So I might just pass it over. We had a brief conversation about that. Maybe we could start off with that, or else if you don't want to talk about the work directly, maybe just talk about your practice and how you put things together. How do you choose, you know, the sounds that you use, the gestures that you use, the video gestures or performance gestures, or how do you sort of work out when things go where and all that sort of stuff. So very, very pragmatic sort of stuff. That might be quite a good way to start first, rather than talking directly about the work.
Do you want to talk about it? Do you want to talk about it? I can talk about it. Okay, I don't know. But it is sort of like this entity who is the protagonist of the story that we have written through which you experience whatever we've constructed. And I think we talked about who it is heaps because people always ask. And we've sort of come to this conclusion that who it is doesn't really matter because the identity of it is not really in its way of identification in accordance to whatever external structure of meaning, but rather this very, an entity in this specific moment, any entity in this specific moment, which in this work is the first day, which I think is spoken a lot about in the text itself, is what it is, as in the entity in the first day where meaning structures has not been internalized, and there's this sense of like confusion but wonder and curiosity that you embody when you encounter whatever that is external. And when we started the work, do you want to talk about the comic?
Yeah.
The whole thing starts with the comic.
Before we start, I was kind of reading a comic book, a Japanese one, and the comic book doesn't really matter, but the start is like there's this ball that got put into the world, and the ball needs to learn how to comprehend and make sense of its surroundings. So at first, the ball was next to a piece of moss, so it became the moss. And then it was next to a rock, and it became a rock. And then a wolf died next to the rock, and it became the wolf. So that's kind of, we're just really intrigued by that.
Yeah,
and we just, yes.
Yeah, we've set up this like emotional tone. We were like, we're not working with like content or a concept. We're working with this emotional tone that underlies everything and every decision that's been made.
Oh yeah, and we just... Sorry.
What? What were you going to say? This is what happened. We just talk about each other. But we had these key words.
We're siblings, in case people don't know.
Yeah, we're siblings.
We're more like polite to the yeah. Anyways, so there were these two keywords that we had, which is confused but curious. So like overwhelmed but still wants to keep going.
Yeah, this sense of being overwhelmed by, I don't know, whatever that the perceptual field brings you. But at the same time, there's this intrigue and there's this wonder in it. So the overwhelm is not necessarily something that is negative, not a negative emotion, but in fact, this like drive to experience or to like really be in it. And I feel like that's sort of the kind of emotional tone that we want the viewers to be able to embody as well, to enact that and in some sense become it, because the video doesn't really make sense, you know? But it does in that other way, yeah.
That's it.
It. And also, you're talking about the audience being embodied, becoming it, maybe, through their experiences and how they see the world. Taking that way a bit. Also, another thing that we talked about is how it sort of sits in a liminal space where it feels kind of maybe unresolved or just not complete all the time, it just keeps on evolving and connecting. It's that between space, you know, it's sort of like stuck in a stuck in a video game where you're gone through the wrong place and you're all of a sudden you're in the underneath of the world looking up. Yeah?
Yeah.
And do you want to talk about that liminality? That space that put the audience in too?
Yeah, we wrote in the text when we were trying to put it into language that this journey is an unresolved series of beginnings. And to talk about it as a series of beginnings, I think it's because with a video format, which is temporal always, has a beginning and an end. And it feels like the story is supposed to go somewhere. The protagonist or the subject evolves, it takes on roles or it experiences things. But this entire video for us is like an amplification of a moment and the feeling of that moment. So the entire duration of the three channels and the 6-something, 7 minutes are all just this like, this. It's like picking this one point, which is that beginning, and then blowing it up. So the entire duration, it's more like more like a sphere rather than linear. But however, there is an ending. Yeah.
So, because when we wrote the unresolved series beginnings, we hadn't really finished the work and we didn't quite know where it's heading to. And for me, the end, like you were saying, the sphere, for me, the end, maybe there's a point that's about to go through the sphere. But so for me, the end, it says this way it is able to grow up. And to me, it's the second right after the beginning, but before anything that's after the beginning.
Yeah,
it's and there. You can talk about...
Mm-hmm. I can talk about what?
Yeah, we talk about like growing up and this... Growing up, it's not like, I don't know, it's not negative or positive necessarily.
It's almost like the minute the work finishes, it ends, you step outside of the space, you enter back into the world where there is meaning structures and you have internalized them and you step sort of outside of the sphere, which was the amplification of whatever, the amplification of a chaos of meaning perhaps. And then when it grows up, it also leaves that sphere. And when the work finishes, we also leave that sphere. And to grow up is like be able to function and to be able to be really. And the beginning, the first day, is not a sustainable place to be, even though I think in the way that we've approached this work, there is sort of some sort of romance in it. Maybe it's romantic to us, that moment. Even though it's like romantic, but it's not like a desire endpoint of where meaning should be or we should be more like this. It's not. It's nothing like that. It's the capturing that moment, amplifying it, and then actually also leave it and being able to grow up. And I feel like it's weird. I feel like all the work that we make together are kind of us about us being children, mm-hmm. even though it's not explicitly never. It's never really about that, but maybe that to do with our...
Let's just not go into...
You don't want to talk about
too personal, sorry.
I wasn't going to talk about that. I was just going to say, you know, just we have our specific relationship to language and meaning mm-hmm. that we share. And that's sort of the underlying foundation of us being able to work together, and that everything we make builds onto that, builds upon that. I wasn't going to talk about childhood trauma or anything.
Hey, with the term amplification, I like that term. Is it a Marshall McLuhan reference? He talked about amplification, enhancing a gesture. Either a sonic gesture or a performance of gesture or a video gesture, those sort of things, pre-amplification. It's a great term. I really like it. But so is it just through your making that you come up with it, or is it just...
I think we respond to it as we make it, as if we were watching it, and there was the keywords in the beginning which grounds everything, but we also like encounter the work all the time as we make it. And a lot of what I'm speaking now is actually through encountering it rather than having any sort of particular, I don't know, we're not very academic.
So with these sort of editing gestures and performance gestures and sonic gestures and all that sort of stuff, are you sort of creating meaning through that process, or is it the story that you wrote in the first place that generates the meaning? Which comes first, really? Or does it need order?
The story came first, to answer that like simple part of the question.
Yeah.
And Al started writing it.
Yeah, and we actually left that aside for a bit.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I didn't like it.
Al wrote something, we forgot about it, and then we started working visually more. But then we came back to the writing, which felt like it was the skeleton of the work, and it was... kind of it's important, and it's got like a lot of weight to it, even though maybe it's a little bit hard to fully absorb when you're watching it. Yeah, but I think everything builds around the language that we used in talking about or for it.
You are listening to Art Not Science, presented by the Physics Room Contemporary Art Space.
I reckon we should open up to the audience some questions instead of boring old Clark Shaw.
Oh!
This is a really basic question. Why three gems? Is there something magic about three? Is it a balance or a symmetry or an asymmetry? Or?
Well, at first we were making a single channel, and we actually somehow we just wanted to make the sound first, so we kind of threaded different sounds like one track and putting visual into it, but it didn't felt right. So, and then we realized maybe we want to use the visual in a orchestra or percussion kind of way. Yeah,
and then the one channel feels like this, the narrative or the linearity is more important when you're viewing a one channel work. But those words there, one of them says eyes looking at all four directions and ears hearing eight sides, and it's this like intense kind of presence in your surroundings, and the sound kind of was doing that for us, but the visual weren't when we were working in one channel, and then it was just like a lightning went straight across. And then we were like, whoa, what if it was three channel? And then also having black bits, having just blank visual when the sound is happening, and a sense of like surprise when things appear in different channels, it felt like it maybe enact that more, this presence, rather than kind of, I don't know, that linearity.
Like, yeah, speaks, so, like how it's fragmented, sometimes they like connect or like work together, like this fragmented but united.
When we showed someone this work, he said there was this constant unification and disunification, things falling apart and then coming together again, and I think the sort of perceptual like feeling, the actual like phenomenological or like physical feeling of that feels significant.
Yeah, it's quite nice, that simple method of just making the screen go black so you focus on the sound more. It's quite a nice technique. Yeah, because you do really listen more when there's no visual material in front of you. It's quite a nice touch. Yeah. Right, maybe another question.
Can I just have a question about how you work across the different media, like what your process is with the writing, if that's something you do together, and also the material that's on the wall, which I love. Is that like a very fluid transition for you, or how are you?
Well, the way we write is actually quite funny, because with like creative writing, we kind of write in different languages. So it normally goes through many layers of translation.
We translate back. We expand on each other's material, and then it becomes one. And also, we spend a lot of time, sometimes we work for a whole day together and nothing happens, because we spend a lot of time just like, what next? And then it feels like medium's always part of that decision, like what's the next thing that it needed, and then it's sort of not really like, I don't know, maybe if you're working in a band, you'll be like, now it's time to go to the next one. But it's always kind of like that, it's like all the possibilities are like all there, but you decide what it means.
Yeah, and for the sound part, there are some tracks that we made and we sang. I guess that part's more like a relaxing break.
Yeah. We sang the songs. Yeah, and then we spend a lot of time looking at other things. We spend a lot of time watching movies and...
And we went to Kelly
Tarleton. We went to Kelly Tarleton's aquarium. The physics room page for the trip. Yeah, so it's like a lot of like observation and looking outwards and then pulling things in and then manipulating them. And with the walls, it was, I think when we were, it's hard to describe why, but when we had the, we weren't planning to do anything on the walls. We were like, we're serious artists now and we can let the videos do their thing and we don't need to like do too much or something. But it just felt like they needed something to maybe...
Is inhabit.
Yeah, for the video to inhabit the space more, and the space becomes more maybe like a step closer to that world, so even though we're all standing like kind of right on the edge or at the door, but it pulls you a little bit closer to the door rather than a video work. There's that distance of like this is the inside the work. And we actually did way more at one point. We did way more on the walls and then painted them out, because maybe you didn't need to know that.
Yeah, they don't.
Is the text on the left-hand side just the title? What is that text?
Mm.
It's not the title. Mm. Should I say what it is?
I think okay. So.
So, you know, you said the IC4 and 8 here, 8. And the other line is words. Go upwards to climb and go downwards to grow roots.
One of them is kind of like more bodily action. Mm-hmm. And then the other one is the perception. I mean, I only worked out why I liked it like yesterday or something. We were practicing during the talk and someone asked us why. It feels like that it's this like, also like the same thing I was saying, intense presence, like occupying the world or like acting on it. And then there's this feeling, when I look at that, it feels like you've got tentacles going outwards and you're moving around this space and then present in it.
Does it matter to you that a lot of your audience won't be able to understand? We thought of good answers.
this one is like funny.
So with all like the Chinese characters, we don't see it as like a performance migrant experience work, because this is how we experience things. So this is like as genuine as we can be.
Really important. And even since the beginning, when we were making decisions about languages, even when you're writing, because we do operate in both, it feels like we really didn't want to be a performance of this other language that's not English, which is obviously the dominant one in contemporary art. But we were thinking about the most genuine way to encounter it, which for us is this. And then at the same time, thinking about whether I would show this work to a completely Chinese audience, and I would be like very comfortable that will be even better of doing that. And also I feel like the emotional tone of it is very personal, even though it is like this third person figure, the writing came out of us and obviously it is us. And it feels generous and it feels genuine despite it's slightly withholding and that some people can't understand all of it. And we were quite deliberate in making decisions about what to subtitle and what to not. There's some things that were some texts that are pictorial that appears are subtitled and some of them are not. And each of them are decisions that has been made. Can't tell you how, I don't know, but I guess it's kind of deliberate and maybe important. I was just going to say, you can feel everything anyway. Like there's a bit where Al's like voice is super, super dramatic. You can tell. It's not really...
We workshop the acting.
A lot, yeah. Yeah, it seems like there is things around the language as signifiers, which even though you don't have access to that, there's all the things around it, I think, are accessible despite not understanding the language as signifiers. I feel like it does. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's when you experience it. You don't always understand everything, but the work is really generous, and we have talked about it before, in the sense that it's offering so much it's quite rich, you know, it's got a lot of sort of product material, it's got language, performances and all that sort of stuff. So, in a way, it doesn't matter if the audience doesn't fully understand everything, because they can sort of fill in the gaps, like you say, with those signifiers, that sort of maybe point in a certain direction, but not necessarily answer it completely, allowing the audience to sort of experience it and take on their way of seeing it. But yeah, I think it's a very rich video, so I think by having every subtitle, I mean every piece of text subtitle, I think would probably ruin the experience, because you're answering too much. Mm. I don't know what you think about that.
Yeah, we just look at it and be like, does it need it? Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. The part where it goes ding, 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 and then the ding comes in, I was like, that one is important, because the Chinese text, the Mandarin text that comes in is ding, and it's the phonetic one, and I feel like it was important that it's not a noun, and it's not like anything else, but just a description of that sound, so that one was subtitled.
Do the found video footage make meaning to you, or like, was it easy to find, or were you familiar with a lot of the clips before, like, choosing them?
Everything is from Chinese cinema, and a lot of them the 80s, which is, we wanted it to, like, sort of have this coherence, and it wouldn't have made sense to use Hollywood footage. We watched a lot of movies, and a lot of them, I think, are things that are pulled out of context, and things that I think, imagery that specifically resonate with whatever we're doing, and sort of intentionally recontextualizing it. And there are bits that actually, footage that we saw that we really, really loved, but didn't use because it felt like those footage were significant to the world that whatever work was building, and stripping it out of the that context feels disrespectful or inappropriate. Mm-hmm. So the ones that are here, a lot of them, I think, almost like they're threading this world together that's outside of its original narrative in cinema. Which I don't know. Do you think that's it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's quite like interesting. We talk about perspective a lot, and we talk about like linear time, perspective and time and visual as this sort of quite a kind of a Western thing. And I feel like that time was a really interesting time in Chinese cinema and also animation. And it feels like there's this like, we called it like Chinese futurism, which was sort of just after the Second World War, maybe 20 years after. There's a lot of influence of Western art, and then there's this like push towards what it means to be urban and this drive towards a modern or urban society. What manifested feels like something that's really specific to the time. And if you look at cinema in China now, it feels very aligned with Hollywood, basically. And I think those perspective, time or space, have been sort of internalized. But I feel like this is a time before that, even though there's this drive towards media, and which came from, I think it was like influenced by America, but the perspective was really different. It's not perspectivism, I see it from this cultural perspective, but actually quite like the way you understand space, the way you understand time, and the way you use language. I think perspective speaks to all of those things, not really like where you're positioned. Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks everyone for coming.
Thanks, John.
All right, awesome.
Meeting adjourned.
That was Sean, Shinya, and Al discussing their work for Thus the Blast Carried It Into the World. Come into the gallery for the last weekend of Monitor 3.1 and see Shinya and Al's work alongside work by Campbell Patterson, Juliet Carpenter, Haney Armenius, Shannon Tiao, Soda Jerk, Kirsten Lucas, Laura Parnes, Lee Huliston, Lisa Rehana, and Annie O'Neill, Nathan Puhiel, Paul Redigan, and Ronnie Van Hout. The gallery is open 11 to 4 on Saturday and Sunday. Thanks for listening, and tune in again next month on Friday, 19th of March at 8 p.m. for our next episode of Art, Not Science. Mā te wā.
The Physics Room is generously supported by Creative New Zealand, the Christchurch City Council, the Rata Foundation, Three Boys Brewery, Signtech, Resine Paints, and the Crater Rim.